ब्रह्मज्ञानचमनन्दस्य जनार्दनशलाकया चक्षुस्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं मुक्तपीतं येन भूतले स्वयं कपिलमयं ददति स पनन्तिकम् मञ्जुकपटुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैः सह पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Narada Muni is continuing to describe to Yudhisthira Maharaj the different stations in the ashramas. Ashramas mean the different stages of brahmacharya student, meaning student, or grihastha, and vanaprastha, grihastha being married, vanaprastha meaning renounced, in the forest or provisional renunciation, practicing austerities, and then the sannyas. So he's explained in the previous chapter the student and the vanaprastha. And now he's going to describe something about the behavior of a perfect person, which means one who is in the highest order of renunciation, the highest order of sannyas. So there are four different orders of sannyas, gradiated. Bahudak, or the first one is Kutichak, Bahudak is the second one, then Paripajakacharja, and then the Paramhamsa. The Paripajakacharja means the itinerant preacher, the one who wanders from place to place, depending on Krishna, Paratmanishtam, fixed in the Supreme Lord, fully renounced and dependent upon Krishna. Just wandering, not making provisions for his own needs, but letting Krishna take care of him. And preaching as he does that. Brahmachari life or studentship is for study, celibacy, training of the senses, training of the mind. Householder life is specifically for charity. Vanaprastha life is to remove the tendency for comfort by practicing austerity. And then sannyas life is meant for preaching. And in the final aspect of sannyas life, when one is paramhamsa, then one is really out of this world. One is in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world means his relationship with Krishna is awakened. And his relationship with his body has been broken. That he doesn't identify with the body, although he may be within a material body. So the first verse in this 13th chapter of the 7th canto, Narada Muni said, Sri Narada said, a person able to cultivate spiritual knowledge should renounce all material connections, and merely keeping the body inhabitable, in other words, doing nothing for material enjoyment. The activities are only to keep the body and soul together. So merely keeping the body inhabitable, he should travel from one place to another, passing only one night in each village. In this way, without dependence in regard to the needs of the body, the sannyasi should travel all over the world. Charen Mahim, all over the earth, he should just wander. A person in the renounced order of life may try to avoid even a dress to cover himself. If he wears anything at all, it should be only a loincloth, kopan. And when there is no necessity, a sannyasi should not even accept a danda, a staff. A sannyasi should avoid carrying anything but a danda and a kamadalu, his water pot. So in other words, no material attachments. And rather than feeling the lack of having material facilities, the sannyasi will feel enlivened due to his fully awakened spiritual facilities. To Text 3. The sannyasi, completely satisfied in the self, should live on alms begged from door to door. Not being dependent on any person or place, he should always be a friendly well-wisher to all living beings and be a peaceful, unalloyed devotee of Narayan. Sarva Bhuta Suritchanto Narayana Parayana. Very dear and dependent on Lord Narayan as he's wandering from place to place. This is a renunciant, a sannyasi. Not staying in any place, because when one stays in a place for a while, regardless if the place is a horrible place, one develops attachments. So not staying anywhere for long, continuously wandering, so he doesn't develop any attachments in the material world, but develops full attachment to Krishna and becomes Narayana Parayana. Depends on Krishna, becomes dear to Narayana by becoming his devotee. The sannyasi should always try to see the Supreme pervading everything and see everything, including this universe, resting on the Supreme. This was basically the principle that was spoken of in the 7th verse of the 11th chapter. The principle underlying the entire society, the goal of society, the goal of all the vanas, the goal of all the ashramas. In that 7th verse, that mula principle, Dharma mulam, ni bhagavan sava veda mayo hari, smartam chatad vidam rajan yena chatma prasidati. The Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles, and the memory of great authorities in the mind of all great authorities. This is what's going on in their minds. Remembrance of the Lord. Well, King Yudhisthira Narada said, this principle of religion is understood to be as evidence. This is authoritative. That Krishna is the root of everything. On the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. And then, so understanding that Krishna is the root of everything. And then, later on, when after the brahmachari is described, one should realize that in the fire, in the spiritual master, in oneself, and in all living entities, this is text 15 and chapter 12, in all circumstances and conditions, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, has simultaneously entered and not entered. He is situated externally and internally as the full controller of everything. So this is, and in the next verse, by practicing in this way, whether one be a brahmachari, in the brahmachari ashram, grihastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, or sannyasa ashram, one must always realize the all-pervading presence of the Supreme Lord. For in this way it is possible to understand the Supreme Absolute Truth. In other words, one should cultivate consciousness, Krishna consciousness, consciousness of Krishna everywhere. Because there is no place where he is absent. So the sannyas especially does this through his dependence on Krishna, wandering throughout the world, sometimes in a dangerous situation, sometimes in a peaceful situation. But in any case, just depending upon Krishna and seeing him and his mercy and his energy, his manifestations, everywhere. So again, that verse. Sannyasi should always try to see, this is 4, the Supreme pervading everything and see everything, including the universe, resting on the Supreme. So he's everywhere and everything is resting upon him. So this is the mood of one who is renounced. And because of the depth of this realization, he can remain fixed wherever he is, fixed in Krishna consciousness. During unconsciousness and consciousness, supti prabodayo sandhav, during consciousness and unconsciousness, when one is unconscious of the spiritual, or one is conscious of that one's a soul, and between the two, and everything in between, he should try to understand the self and be fully situated in the self. In this way, one should realize that the conditioned and liberated stages of life are only illusory and not actually factual. With such a higher understanding, he should see only the absolute truth pervading everything. So he should see the supreme absolute truth, not even himself as a soul. This is another kind of illusion, in the sense that if one sees oneself as a soul, it is incomplete. He may be conscious, recognize that he as a soul possesses the quality of consciousness, and that consciousness may even be crystal clear. But it is incomplete unless he sees his relationship with the Absolute Truth. So whether one is unconscious, asleep, fully engrossed in material energy, or he's aware of himself as a soul even, and is even, as the verse says, in the liberated stage of life, mokcham cha bandham, either bound, pashyani, sees bandham, being bound, cha mokcham cha, or liberated, maya matram navastuta, having no true substance. So he should be so fixed in the Lord, so just attached to that. This is very wonderful consciousness. Text 6. Since the material body is sure to be vanquished, and the duration of one's life is not fixed, neither death nor life is to be praised. Rather, one should observe the eternal time factor in which the living entities manifest himself and disappears. So some people, they praise life and try to take to life and enjoy life to the fullest. And other people are so miserable in life, they think, what is this life? There's no pleasure in life. It's better to be dead. But one should be not in either of those consciousnesses, but rather, Narada tells you to stay, Maharaj, one should observe the eternal time factor in which the living entities manifest himself and disappears. He should see that everything is moving by the potency of time. Everything, life and death, out of control, at least out of our control. We're being moved according to our karma by the Lord in the form of time. Prabhupada's purport. The living entities in the material world, not only at the present but also in the past, have been involved in trying to solve the problem of birth and death. Some stress death and point to the illusory existence of everything material, whereas others stress life, trying to preserve it perpetually and enjoy it to the best of their ability. Both of them, those who think that everything is finished in death and those who just think about life with stressing that, both of them, Prabhupada says, are fools and rascals. It is advised that one observe the eternal time factor, which is the cause of the material body's appearance and disappearance, and that one observe the living entity's entanglement in the time factor. And what entangles one in the time factor is desire to enjoy, that fixes one in one's karma, fruit of work, the desire to enjoy, based on false ego. And watch how the time factor moves everything. We think we are moving things, but it actually is the time factor that moves our karma. So one should watch this. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur therefore sings in his Gitavali, Anari karamafal padi babar navajal jale tari bare nadeki upai. One should observe the activities of eternal time, which is the cause of birth and death. Before the creation of the present millennium, the living entities were under the influence of the time factor, and within the time factor, the material world comes into existence and is again annihilated. Bhutva bhutva praliyate, being under the control of the time factor, the living entities appear and die, life after life. This time factor is the impersonal representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gives the living entities conditioned by material nature a chance to emerge from this nature by surrendering to Him. So watching this amazing continuum go on, and understanding how helpless we are within the material world, controlled, conditioned, and then letting that be the cause of attachment to Lord Narayan and surrender to Him and dependence upon Him. More instructions in text 7 for these sannyasis. Literature that is a useless waste of time, in other words, literature without spiritual benefit, should be rejected. One should not become a professional teacher as a means of earning one's livelihood, nor should one indulge in arguments and counter-arguments, nor one should take shelter of any cause or faction. Prabhupada's prayer point. A person desiring to advance in spiritual understanding should be extremely careful to avoid reading ordinary literature. The world is full of ordinary literature that creates unnecessary agitation in the mind. Such literature, including newspapers, dramas, novels, and magazines, is factually not meant for advancement in spiritual knowledge. Indeed, it has been described as a place of enjoyment for crows. Tadvayasham tirtham. Anyone advancing in spiritual knowledge must reject such literature. Furthermore, one should not concern oneself with the conclusions of various logicians or philosophers. Of course, those who preach sometimes need to argue with the contention of opponents, but as much as possible, one should avoid an argumentative attitude. In this connection, Srimad Vacharya says, and there's two Sanskrit verses, there is no need to take shelter of unnecessary literature. This is a quote that Prabhupada's translation of the two verses of Madhva Charja. There is no need to take shelter of unnecessary literature or concern oneself with many so-called philosophers or thinkers who are useless for spiritual advancement. Nor should one accept a disciple for the sake of fashion or popularity. One should be callous to these so-called shastras, neither opposing nor favoring them. And one should not earn one's livelihood by taking money for explaining shastra. A sannyasi must always be neutral and seek the means to advance in spiritual life, taking full shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. So one should avoid, this is for the sannyasis especially, but as Narada already told Yudhisthira Maharaj, that all the principles are for everyone. The principles of renunciation, especially for everyone, because everyone ultimately is not naham vipra na chanarapati napi vaishya na srudro naham varni na chagriyapati. We are not any of these things, members of varnas or ashramas, ultimately gopi bhakta parikamalaya dasa dasa na das. We are souls, eternally servants of Krishna. So, the sannyasi especially should remain neutral and unentangled. And to be in that way, these instructions should be followed. Don't be attached to disciples. Don't get involved in factions or issues, or arguments and counter-arguments, or reading literatures that do not help one's spiritual advancement, that just agitate the mind. So all these things entangle one in the material world and they should be avoided. 8. A sannyasi must not present allurements of material benefits to gather many disciples, nor should he unnecessarily read many books or give discourses as a means of livelihood. He must never attempt to increase material opulences unnecessarily. Prabhupada's purport. So-called swamis and yogis generally make disciples by alluring them with material benefits. There are many so-called gurus who attract disciples by promising to cure their diseases or increase their material opulences by manufacturing gold. These are lucrative allurements for unintelligent men. A sannyasi is prohibited from making disciples through such material allurements. Sannyasis sometimes indulge in material opulence by unnecessarily constructing many temples and monasteries. But actually, such endeavors should be avoided. Temples and monasteries should be constructed for the preaching of spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, not to provide free hotels for persons who are useful for neither material nor spiritual purposes. Temples and monasteries should be strictly off limits to worthless clubs of crazy men. In the Krishna conscious movement, we welcome everyone who agrees at least to follow the movement's regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, and no gambling. In the temples and monasteries, gatherings of unnecessary, rejected, lazy fellows should be strictly disallowed. The temples and monasteries should be used exclusively by devotees who are serious about spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura explains the word aramban as meaning matari vyaparan, which means attempts to construct temples and monasteries. The first business of the sannyasi is to preach Krishna consciousness. But if, by the grace of Krishna, facilities are available, then he may construct temples and monasteries to give shelter to the serious students of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, such temples and monasteries are not needed. 9. A peaceful, equipoised person who is factually advanced in spiritual consciousness does not need to accept the symbols of sannyas, such as Tridanda and Kamadalu. According to necessity, he may sometimes accept those symbols and sometimes reject them. So there should be no attachments on the material level to one who is so renounced as a sannyasi. Even to his own symbols, the symbols of sannyas. So sometimes he may use them if they're appropriate for preaching, and sometimes if they're not required, he doesn't have to use them at all. No attachment. The attachment always is Narayana Parayana. The attachment is to Krishna. This is ideal. This is perfection. So renunciation on the material level, but deep, deep attachment on the spiritual level. That is what is required. And practically speaking, if we are not attached on the spiritual level, we will not be able to be detached on the material level. From Prabhupada's purport. Srimad Bhagavatam itself is meant for the Paramhamsas. That means the supreme sannyas, the one who is completely detached from the material world, having no identification with the material body, his own material body, what to speak of trying to enjoy himself in the material world on the material level. So Srimad Bhagavatam itself is meant for the Paramhamsas, Paramo Nimatsaranam Satam, which means that those who are unenvious, that's who Srimad Bhagavatam is actually meant for. This book is meant for those who are not envious, who have no envy. And if we are envious of anyone in the material world, how envious must we be of Krishna? Because he is the possessor of everything that we don't have. He is the Supreme Lord. So Bhagavatam is actually meant for those who have no envy in their heart, who do not envy Krishna, who have surrendered to Krishna, who act and consider themselves as his servant. Unless one is in the Paramhamsa stage, he is not eligible to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. For Paramhamsas, or sannyasis in the Vaishnava order, preaching is the first duty. To preach, such sannyasis may accept the symbols of sannyas, such as the danda and the kamaldenu, dalu. Well, sometimes they may not. Generally, the Vaishnava sannyasis, being paramhamsas, are automatically called bhavajis, and they do not carry a kamadalu or danda or staff, the water pot or the staff, which are the typical symbols of a sannyasi. They have the sannyasis when they travel. They will take with them no material possessions, but they will take their staff and the water pot. Such a sannyasi, so the topmost sannyasis, the babajis, they don't carry these things even. Such a sannyasi is free to accept or reject the marks of sannyas. His only thought is, where is there an opportunity to spread Krishna consciousness? Sometimes the Krishna consciousness movement sends its representative sannyasis to foreign countries where the danda, the staff, and the kamandalu are not very much appreciated. We send our preachers in ordinary dress to introduce our books and philosophy. Our only concern is to attract people to Krishna consciousness. We may do this in the dress of a sannyasi or in the regular dress of a gentleman. Our only concern is to spread interest in Krishna consciousness. The Prabhupada is speaking of the underlying principle. Because the verse has explained, according to necessity, the sannyas may sometimes accept those symbols that a sannyasi will tend to carry, those two, kamadalu and the staff, the water pot and the staff, but sometimes he does not. So what is the discrimination? What helps him discriminate whether he should accept or reject the symbols? And it is, what is Krishna's interest? What is the best thing for the service of God? In other words, he has completely surrendered himself as a servant of Krishna, without material attachments, surrendered as Krishna's. And because he is surrendered to Krishna, then he has the right to consider Krishna his. I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine. Text 10. Although a saintly person may not expose himself to the vision of human society, by his behavior his purpose is disclosed. To human society he should present himself like a restless child, and although he is the greatest thoughtful orator, he should present himself like a dumb man. Purport. A great personality may be very advanced in Krishna consciousness. He may, very much advanced in Krishna consciousness, may not expose himself by the signs of a sannyasi. To cover himself, he may live like a restless child or a dumb person, although he is the greatest orator or poet. So we saw this already in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, that sometimes exalted personalities, they'll cover their elevated consciousness and not reveal it to people by preaching or by acting in an exalted way. Rather, they will try to keep out of the way of the general public and act like a madman or someone who is primitive in some way or another. But actually inside, with their consciousness, they're relishing the greatest of all happinesses, the pleasure of their relationship with Krishna. But they don't, for their own reasons or for Krishna's reasons, they don't want to reveal this at some time. So therefore, they may hide themselves, covering themselves in that way. So Jada Bharat did this. We heard about this in the fifth canto. And he was wandering around as if he was somewhat retarded. But then, when Maharaj Rahugana insulted him, he decided to preach to the king. And he preached in such a powerful way. He touched his heart so deeply that immediately the king understood that this was not a retarded person at all. Rather, this person was an exalted sage, a sadhu, who has realized his words had such potency. Because of the depth of his realization, so that gave his words weight. Indeed, guru means heavy, because of the weight of his realization, and therefore the weight of his words due to realization. So sometimes these great souls may choose to reveal themselves, who they are, that they're devotees, that they're preachers, and they go out and they preach very strongly from the depth of their realization, trying to help the unfortunate souls who are covered by illusion in this world. And sometimes, for Krishna's purpose, they may cover themselves, as did Rishabdev Maharaj at some times in Jada Bharat. So now, Narada Muni is going to tell a story, a pastime, a historical example of one such learned sage who had covered himself. So this will be told for quite a while. So Narada Muni says, as a historical example of this, someone who's covering himself, learned sages recite the story of an ancient discussion between Prahlad Maharaj and a great saintly person who was feeding himself like a python. Now, how does a python feed himself? He just sits in a place and he just waits. And whatever comes along, he takes. He eats. Now that's usually not how people will wait for their food. They don't just sit there and they open their mouths and see what comes along. But this is a particular method of maintaining oneself by someone who is not at all connected to the body. The thinking is, if God chooses to send something, then I'll eat. If not, okay. Completely dependent. I'm detached. So he was this saintly person had adopted this mode of feeding himself called ajaghara, like a python. That's the Sanskrit word for a python. Prabhupada's short purport to this verse. The saintly person met by Prahlad Maharaj was undergoing ajaghara vritti, the living conditions of a python, which does not go anywhere but sits in one place for years and eats whatever is automatically available. Prahlad Maharaj, along with his associates, met this great saint and spoke to him as follows. So one has to be completely dependent on Krishna to be like this, and to sit in one place and not do anything. This is, practically speaking, impossible. But why? Because the soul by nature is active. We cannot sit still for a moment, practically speaking. We need activity. So what is the activity of a person, a great sage who has adopted this ajaghara vritti, the pose of a python? Internally, he's experiencing and relishing his relationship with the Absolute Truth. So he's in very deep ecstasy. And to maintain the body and soul together, no anxiety, what Krishna provides I will take. So internally, absorbed in spiritual consciousness. Externally, just whatever Krishna provides I'll take. I'm not going to expend energy. I'm dependent on Krishna, on the Supreme. So Prahlad Maharaj, this is text 13. The most dear servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, once went out touring the universe with some of his confidential associates just to study the nature of saintly persons. Thus he arrived at the bank of the Kaveri, where there was a mountain known as Saya. There he found a great saintly person who was lying on the ground covered with dirt and dust, but who was deeply spiritually advanced. So not everyone lying on the ground covered with dirt and dust by definition is deeply spiritual advanced, but sometimes exalted spiritually advanced personalities will adopt this mode for the reasons we have mentioned. They don't want to bother with the material world. They're in the material world, in material bodies, but they don't want to bother with it. They're in the material world in the sense that they're embodied. They're not acting. They're not acting free from the material body. They have a relationship with it, but it is just external for them, just like someone may have a car. There are some people who have cars and they fully think themselves their car. They identify with their car. They get pleasure by their car. They get misery from their car if it gets bumped or something. But there are other people who just use a car. They take care of it as far as necessary and they just use it. No identification with it. Those people, the cars usually belong to someone else and they're just borrowing it usually. Take care of it to a minimum degree. Because why? Because they know they're just passing through the ownership of it. They're using it right now and tomorrow they have to return it to someone. So similarly, we have bodies now. We have the body, but is it ours, the source of our pleasure, the source of our misery? We're just inhabiting it for some time, and then we have to return it from where it came. Where did the body come from? From the dust of the earth, from the water, ultimately the oceans, the air, the fire, It's just composed of these basic ingredients, and eventually it returns. So we're just inhabiting it for some time, like a rented property, not an owned property. So this saintly person was just lying on the ground, just internally depending on Krishna, serving Krishna, or on the absolute truth level, and externally keeping the body and soul together. So what would we expect such a person to look like? So it's saying that he's dirty, he's covered with dirt and dust, but what would we expect him to be if he's just depending on Krishna for his food in that way? How would we expect him to look? Would he be fat or skinny? We'd normally think, boy, if he's just going to open his mouth and wait for the food to come, he's going to be completely famished, continuously, just bones. But he wasn't like that at all. And Prahlad will explain this gradually. So he was lying there, neither by that saintly person's activities, by his bodily features, by his words, nor by the symptoms of his vanashrama status, could people understand whether he was the same person they had known. Purport. The inhabitants of that particular place on the bank of the Kaveri, in the valley of the mountainside, the mountain known as Saya, were unable to understand whether that saint was the same man they had known. So he had become realized, he had left things, and that maybe perhaps they had known him before, but is he the same person now? Look what he's doing. He's lying down on the ground covered with dirt. It is therefore said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigye Na Bujhaya. They could not understand what was in his mind. So this verse means a highly advanced Vaishnava lives in such a way that no one can understand what he is or what he was. Nor should attempts be made to understand the past of a Vaishnava. Without asking the saintly person about his previous life, Prahlad Maharaj immediately offered him respectful obeisances. He bowed down to him, even though Prahlad was the king. He was a Maharaj, he was the king. When he saw the saintly person, he bowed down, offered his obeisances. He didn't ask him, oh, where are you, what country are you from, and what about this, and what about that, and what's your mother's name, and your father's name, and what did you do before for a living, and what education did you have, and this and that, and this and that, and so many trivial questions. No, he wanted, when dealing with a saintly person, he wanted to get to the essence of the communication, and that was about spiritual life. So the advanced devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, duly worshipped and offered obeisances to the saintly person who had adopted a python's means of livelihood. After thus worshipping the saintly person and touching his own head to the saint's lotus feet, Prahlad Maharaj, in order to understand him, inquired very submissively as follows. Seeing the saintly person to be quite fat, he wasn't skinny at all. Seeing the saintly person to be quite fat, Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear sir, you undergo no endeavor to earn your livelihood, but you have a stout body, exactly like that of a materialistic enjoyer. I know that if one is very rich and has nothing to do, he becomes extremely fat by eating and sleeping and performing no work. Prabhupada's purport." So he's wondering, how is this that you're so chubby, stout, fat? Materialistic people work very, very hard, sometimes days, sometimes nights, sometimes day and night, to maintain a house and their family and to get food and pay the bills. And usually they're in anxiety and they won't get fat. But here, he wasn't working at all, and yet he was in no anxiety, and yet he was stout and fat and chubby and healthy. So Prahlad Maharaj was saying, how is this? You're not working. You don't endeavor in any way, and yet you appear to be as chubby as a materialist. What is this? Prabhupada's purport we'll speak about fatness and spiritual life. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not like his disciples to become very fat in the course of time. He would become very anxious upon seeing his fat disciples becoming bogies or enjoyers of the senses. This attitude is herewith confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj, who was surprised to see a saintly person adopting a jagara vritti and becoming very fat. Contradictory. In the material world also, we see that when a man who is poor and skinny gradually endeavors to earn money through business or some other means and then gets the money, he enjoys the senses to his satisfaction. By enjoying the senses, one becomes fat. Therefore, in spiritual advancement, becoming fat is not at all satisfactory. Next verse. So Prahlad Maharaj continues to speak to the saintly person. O Brahmana, O one in the mode of goodness, O saintly person, fully in knowledge of transcendence, you have nothing to do, and therefore you're lying down. It is also understood that you have no money for sense enjoyment. How then has your body become so fat? It wasn't. This isn't the normal polite way to talk to someone you've just met. But Prahlad Maharaj was getting, he had a spiritual purpose to his questioning. Under the circumstances, if you do not consider my question impudent, kindly explain how this has happened. He was actually amazed. Prabhupada's purport. Generally, those engaged in spiritual advancement take food only once, either in the morning or in the evening. If one takes food only once, naturally does not become fat. The learned sage, however, was quite fat, and therefore Prahlad Maharaj was very much surprised. Because of being experienced in self-realization, a transcendentalist certainly becomes bright-faced. And one who is advanced in spiritual realization must be considered to possess the body of a brahmana. Because the bright-faced saintly person was lying down and not working and yet was quite fat, Prahlad Maharaj was puzzled and wanted to question him about this. Text 19. Your honor appears learned, expert, and intelligent in every way. Prahlad is continuing. You can speak very well, saying things that are pleasing to the heart. You see that people in general are engaged in fruitive activities, yet you are lying here inactive. Prabhupada's short purport. Prahlad Maharaj studied the bodily features of the saintly person, and through the saint's physiognomy, that means the shape of his head and the body, the different bumps and marks on the face and the head, they give indications of the mentality and the qualities a person possesses. There are certain marks or bumps on the head that mean a very good memory. There are certain indentations that denote that the person is very austere in his eating. There are the marks indicate intelligence and charitableness, and these indicate very diligent in one's performing one's duties. So Prahlad knew this science of physiognomy, and he immediately recognized the person's qualities, that he was intelligent and expert in things, and yet he was there and just inactively lying. So he's asking, and fat also. So he's asking, how has this all come about? Narada Muni continued. Narada Muni is narrating this narration between Prahlad and the saintly person. So Narada Muni continued. When the saintly person was thus questioned by Prahlad Maharaj, the king of the Daityas, he was captivated by the shower of nectarian words, and he replied to the inquisitive of Prahlad Maharaj with a smiling face. The saintly brahmana said, O best of the asuras, Prahlad Maharaj, who are recognized by advanced and civilized men, you are aware of the different stages of life because of your inherent transcendental eyes with which you can see a man's character and thus know clearly the results of acceptance and rejections of things as they are. Prabhupada's short purport. A pure devotee like Prahlad Maharaj can understand the minds of others because of his pure vision and devotional service. A devotee like Prahlad Maharaj can study another man's character without difficulty just by immediately looking at them. So perceptive and such subtle intelligence, they can immediately understand someone's nature. 22. Narayan, this is the saintly Brahmana speaking. First he glorified Prahlad Maharaj, who was himself an exalted soul. He said, Narayan, the saintly person continued, Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full of all opulences, is predominant within the core of your heart because of your being a pure devotee. So what do we have dominant within the core of our hearts? Surely we don't want anyone else to know, generally speaking. It's not always the best of things. But what was dominant in Prahlad Maharaja's heart? The Lord, Narayan, and his love and service and affection for him. Why? Because Prahlad was a pure devotee. So he's recognizing this quality of Prahlad. Prahlad could understand who he was due to his purity and subtlety of mind. And similarly, the great sage understood, due to his own purity and subtlety of mind, who was questioning him, the qualities of Prahlad, that he was a great devotee. So he said, the Lord, Lord Narayan, he always drives away all the darkness of ignorance as the sun drives away the darkness of the universe. Prabhupada's purport. The word bhakti kevalaya indicate that simply by executing devotional service, one can become full of knowledge. Krishna is the master of all knowledge. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yasyaha sriya. Those are the six opulences of the Lord. The Lord is situated in everyone's heart. Ishvara savabhutanam riddhishe arjuna tishtati. And when the Lord is pleased with a devotee, the Lord instructs him. Only to the devotees, however, does the Lord give instructions by which to advance further and further in devotional service. To others, the non-devotees, the Lord gives instructions according to the manner of their surrender. The pure devotee is described by the words Bhaktya Kevalaya. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Bhaktya Kevalaya means Jnana Kumari Amisraya, unmixed with fruitive activities or speculative knowledge. Simply surrendering at the lotus feet is the cause of all a devotee's enlightenment and awareness. So because the devotee gives himself to the Lord gives himself to the devotee. And to materialistic persons, according to their desires, the Lord reciprocates with them. So what they're surrendering to, everyone must surrender. It's unavoidable that we surrender. Everyone must surrender. We surrender to our senses, to our jobs, to our family members, to our relatives, to our friends. No one can be independent. Even if we claim to be independent, that we don't surrender to anyone, we're surrendering to that independent mood which we're very proud of and cultivate. So Krishna allows us, he reciprocates with us according to those desires. But if one desires to serve Krishna, as Bhaktya Kevala means pure, one-pointed, unmixed devotion. So if one has that, which means, as Vishnav Chakravarti Thakur has said, Janma Kamarya Amisraya, not mixed with anything, no selfishness, no selfish tinges. So then Krishna, so if one is so surrendered, Krishna completely cleanses such a devotee's heart, for he is like light which destroys the darkness of the ignorance in the heart. So the saintly person recognized Prahlad's position of being pure due to his devotion to the Lord. Lord Narayan, Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu. So the final verse we read, my dear king, the saintly person said, although you know everything, you have posed some questions which I shall try to answer according to what I have learned by hearing from authorities. I cannot remain silent in this regard, for a personality like you is just fit to be spoken to by one who desires self-purification. Prabhupada's purport. So here he was, the saintly person. He was staying in a aloof, in a secluded place, just in an internal mood, covering himself, his actual realizations. But when Prahlad Maharaj came along and questioned him, because he was so exalted himself, the saint was moved to reply to him. And his covering was shattered, so to speak. Prabhupada's purport. A saintly person doesn't wish to speak to anyone and everyone, and he is therefore grave and silent. Generally, a common man does not need to be advised. Why? A common man, practically by definition, lacks knowledge. He should be advised, but why doesn't he need to be advised? It's because he has no interest. So, he does not need to be advised unless one is prepared to take instructions. It is said that a saintly person should not address him. Although sometimes, because of great kindness, a saintly person speaks to ordinary men. As for Prahlad Maharaj, however, since he was not a common ordinary man, whatever questions he posed would have to be answered, even by a great and exalted personality. Therefore, the saintly Brahmana did not remain silent, but began to answer. These answers, however, were not concocted by him. This is indicated by the words yatashrutam, meaning, as I have heard from the authorities. In the parampara system, when the questions are bona fide, the answers are bona fide. No one should attempt to create or manufacture answers. One must refer to the shastras and give answers according to Vedic understanding. The words yatashrutam refer to Vedic knowledge. The Vedas are known as Shruti because the knowledge is received from authority. Shruti means that it is heard through the ears. The statement of the Vedas are known as Shruti Praman. One should quote evidence from the Shruti, the Vedas or Vedic literatures, and then one's statements will be correct. Otherwise, one's words will proceed from mental concoction. And through our own minds, how far can we get? We are so limited, we're imperfect, we lack so many things. If we limit our advancement spiritually to our own power, our own prowess, our own abilities, the result will certainly be limited. So if we want to get an unlimited result, we have to get knowledge from a different source other than our own minds, our own abilities. So that source primarily is the scriptures, shastras, Vedic scriptures, and they come through the holy personalities. So the who have learned the scriptures from other authorities. So this saint will next begin to speak what he has heard, but not just parroting, but realized what he has realized, heard and realized. So therefore, it will have incredible potency. So he'll speak and he'll continue hearing his words in the next class. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? A few minutes. Yes. What it means is that one shouldn't learn spiritual knowledge and teach it for the financial remuneration that one will get. Not that one shouldn't become a teacher and maintain himself by teaching in a school or something like that, but one shouldn't learn and charge for spiritual knowledge and make use of the spiritual knowledge to get financial gain for himself so he can maintain himself and his family and live in a very luxurious way. That's what it means. Any other questions or comments? Yeah. Yes. Means that the mind's business is to accept and reject. This is what it does. When it likes something, it accepts it. And when it doesn't like something, it rejects it. And it can switch back and forth between the two in an instant. So what is the basis by which the mind accepts and rejects things? It's whether it thinks it will bring him pleasure, he accepts it, or if he thinks it won't bring pleasure or bring some kind of suffering or pain, he'll reject that thing. So this, he recognized that, the saintly person recognized that Prahlad, he could understand the results of accepting things and rejecting things as they are. We become bewildered. The mind wants something and it thinks it's going to give pleasure, so it grasps onto it so tenaciously. But actually, his grasping onto it is illusory, because the thing that he wants and imagines going to bring him pleasure will bring him no pleasure at all. Actually, it will bring him suffering. So that acceptance and rejection of things is not based on things as they are, but based on illusion. So Prahlad was advanced spiritually, and he clearly understood the results of what is accepted and what's rejected. So he knew things as they were. His discrimination was perfect, based on knowledge, not based on the whim of the mind at the moment, but it was based on deep wisdom. He knew what was actually to be accepted and what was to be rejected, what was going to actually cause pain and what was actually going to cause pleasure. So he was fixed in this. But this is very hard to obtain in this world, because often, as Prahlad said in his prayers, even back in chapter 9 or 10, he said very often people are learned. They know what is to be done and what is not to be done, but they don't follow it because they're addicted to, they can't control their senses, and therefore they can't control their mind, and they're addicted to sense pleasure. So despite knowing right from wrong what is to be accepted and what is to be rejected, they can't follow it. But Prahlad was not like that. He had perfect character in that way, because the Lord of being was in his heart, and therefore his heart was cleansed like the darkness is dissipated by the sun. Okay, we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Prahlad Maharaj ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.